Is it rolling, Bob?
Yeah, this bench is just a little more public than I prefer. But what do you expect on a Saturday in the middle of Guildwood Park? Here with the faux Greek columns and stage and the bits of sculpture that still stand. It is a wonderful, wonderful place. And finally, this is the Guildwood Inn I'm parked at. They've opened up the inn itself. They put a lot of money into it. It took decades to decide what to do with this place. It's in Scarborough. And it's a place that I have a connection with. I have podcasts from here before. I brought students here. My son was arrested here for going into the old center before it was renovated. And somebody squealed, and he was picked up by the police. And that led me to where was he? I had to do his community hours and so on. Yep, that's going way back. We're talking high school time. Anyway, this is where I sit today. Last day in September, I guess it's the 30th today. I'm meeting Brian tonight at the Only Cafe. And was at a house party last night. Which, we sat around a table. It's funny, I arrived at the party. I was at the home of the lovely Lisa. Arrived at the party, and I just did not want to go inside. It was a cold night, but I had my leather jacket on. And I arrived, and she had this wonderful veranda with nice benches and cushions. And I guess it's the first cool day we've had. It really felt like a wet fall day, and I just could not go into the house. I needed to sit there. So I rang the bell, handed her a bottle of wine, and then asked if she could open it and give me a glass, and I went back out and sat there for quite a while, just enjoying, sipping wine, sipping red wine, of which I finished the entire bottle, and just that feeling of being where I needed to be, that feeling that you get more and more of as you get older, if you tune into it anyway. Maybe not everybody does, but I sure do, of just knowing this is my place for now. I'm not feeling bad about the particular bench I'm sitting at. It's, as I say, lots of people around, but I like the warmth of the sunshine. So, this is the start of a new Dixon Jeans podcast. That's a non-camping version. I'm sure everybody is tired of my camping podcasts. I probably talk a lot more on them, and maybe because I was alone and needed company. I was reflecting last night on podcasting that, for me, I guess it is a bit of an addiction. And I wonder if it's a contradiction to it as well, just the fact that I profess to want to be alone and then turn around, turn this on, start talking to you. But I wouldn't be doing this if I was with somebody else. And I really do value the time I spend by myself. You know, whether or not that's contradiction, it doesn't really matter. Here I am, sharing with you from my time alone. Oof, God, that's getting awkward. I was dropped by Doug Slater's house to leave a beer and some money in his mailbox for getting me through Amazon Prime the book that I've just picked up that I found in the most indirect of ways. And I guess I haven't told you anything about it because I haven't podcast since my last camping trip. I held off. Actually, I spent a couple of days. I washed the road track, which was a big job. I mean, it required a stepladder, and even then, I didn't get the roof. But I'm so glad I did that. And then fixed a couple little things and vacuumed it out. as a thank you, because on October 4th, it'll be my first anniversary of actually having this creature, which at the end of the last podcast, I was talking about finding growing closer towards, as in a friendship. And that truly is what's happening. I think we may be about to embark on a new adventure, and I'll may get to that in a little bit. While it's tied into what I was just mentioning, the book that Doug was kind enough to order for me and have delivered to my door. It was amazing. Here it is, The Beat Face of God, The Beat Generation Writers as Spirit Guides. And it's written by Stephen Eddington, who is actually a minister in the Unitarian Universalist Church. Retired now. The picture I'm looking at is 10 years ago when this book was written, I guess 2005. He was inspired by the Beats, even though he followed grew up a Baptist and then got into the church and eventually went in search of more liberal churches until he found the Unitarian Universalist Church. And I immediately looked that up and found, oh, it's a branch in Don Mills, very close to where I go to the men's group. Just happens to be at the same time my church in West Hill. But I feel I'm going to have to cross over sometime and make that connection and show up at a service or make myself known to them. Because they are not necessarily atheists, but certainly they don't believe in God in the traditional old man in the sky who answers our prayers or whatever, but in a different kind of a spirit connection. And this book is about this man's particular search for some sort of spiritual connection in his life, which he found through the Beats, or claims he does. Oh, boy. Which leads to New Hampshire, where I've just found out he will do a talk in a week from now at the Lowell Celebrates Kerouac Festival, which is held every year in Lowell, Massachusetts, but this year it's kind of special as it's the 60th anniversary of Kerouac's publication of On the Road, which leads to the possibility of this next adventure I was talking about. Boy, I can't hold any secrets from you, can I? I'm thinking, by God, man, get in that road truck and drive to Lowell, Massachusetts and visit Kerouac sites where he grew up and take part in this festival that stretches out over 4 or 5 days. And that may well be. I've been struggling with this. Oh my God, do I really want to do that? I canceled Thanksgiving with my brother or camping weekend so that I could attend the event I already planned, which is John Loshinsky's PodCamp Toronto Campfire Camp Out. And now I may in turn cancel that so that I could attend this festival in Lowell. I'm just now sending out emails like, geez, where can I park? I mean, I got to sleep in this damn thing. Is this something I really want to take on? And the other voice, the louder voice in my head says, you can't afford not to take that on because you would seriously regret it. And you know, this is one of those things where you get dreams, ideas, thoughts for another adventure the way you have in the past. And is it a question of just, oh, well, now I'm old, I don't do those things anymore, I'm no longer spontaneous? This would be relatively spontaneous in terms of I didn't plan this vacation a year ago. This is, man, I got to be ready Wednesday evening to drive to Kingston to park overnight so that I can get a head start to drive to Lowell, Massachusetts the next day to be on time for the pub crawl. It starts at 6 o'clock, and before I get into that pub crawl, I got to find a place to park my road truck so that I can sleep in it. And I've already contacted the bar where it's starting off and saying, hey, can I park my road truck behind your bar? I'll pay for it. So anyway, things are unfolding at a rapid rate, but it's all tying into this thing that I was thanking Doug for, this particular book, which I had decided I needed, even though I know I didn't need it. But in fact, now I'm convinced, yes, no, I did need it, because it's just one more factor in tipping the scales and making me go and do this very thing. That, hey, if you're a Beat fan, man, what kind of an asshole would you be if you didn't go to this festival? You know, are you just talk? Are you just going to sit home and read the books, or are you actually going to go out and do something? And I'm leaning towards the do something, and I've sort of already mentioned it to my wife. I've looked at the schedule. I can still be back in time to teach my classes the following Wednesday. It's a late Thanksgiving Monday. I've got that off. This just, everything adds up to doing this damn thing. So fuck, man, yeah, you gotta do it. Just like you had to go to Prince George, just like you had to go to Japan, just like you had to go to Nigeria, just like, you know, maybe it's not as big a scale as that. It's a few days of a festival, but it's that same calling that you have to answer. And this book I'm reading now, The Beat Face of God, is talking about, you know, his struggle between wanting a home and stability and a house and a family, all of which I have, but also that need to move, to experience that search for something spiritual in our lives, of which I think I've done a very, very fucking good job of it, the more I reflect on it. So that's that. I think that's it. Boy, that wasn't told in a very orderly manner, but then nothing is on this podcast. I wanted to talk about the roundabout way that sort of led me to this, and it was the last book that I've been reading, that you're aware of. I've been reading quotes, and unfortunately I can't remember the title of it. It's not The Beat Writers at Work, or is it? No, it's the one by the Canadian from Burlington, Ontario. That, yes, which has just been taking me around from every little town. And as, okay, so that book has been a real rush. And that's a book I just, again, randomly picked up out of my library. Oh, I haven't read this one yet. I must have bought it at Circus Books on the Danforth. And as I read it, I was, this guy's done an amazing job. He's gone to every single place that has a Beat connection to it. This guy led the life. And as I'm reading about New Hampshire, he mentions a book by Stephen Eddington, the man whose book I'm holding in my hand now, who I could meet next week at this festival. He mentions his first book about Kerouac's, the home of in Nashua where Kerouac's ancestors are buried. I believe I got that right. And then that led me to this new book he's just published, The Beat Face of God. And so, of course, right away, I just, you know, as I'm reading that book, I've got to get Google out and go check that. And oh my God, there it is on Amazon for $10. Do I want that? Gee, Doug has helped me out before ordering books for me, and in no time at all, I'm texting Doug. Doug says, sure, no problem. I give him the link. He orders lunchtime, and the next day, I'm lying in my road trek, having a little nap, and a truck comes to my post box and drops in this copy. I mean, the next day. You're thinking, holy shit, how is this possible? And as I pick it up, it turns out, I think this is sort of the deciding factor. There's one more element. There's a man called David Amran, who author of Vibrations and Offbeat, collaborating with Kerouac. Mr. Amran is a composer, jazz musician, and friend of and collaborator with Jack Kerouac. He wrote the foreword to the book, which is a very good one. And he will be at this event. And that's just one more reason. How many living connections to the Beats are there that you can, you know, connect with? So, God. I seem to be in a very good space these days, except for my physical health, which, again, I have done nothing yet about. In terms of just being tuned in, anyway, I'll park that there. That's sort of an aside, but I think it's sort of one of the motivating factors. One of the, you know, I've been struggling with this for a couple of days now, but it was like buying the road tract. Do you do it or not? And bam, you got 24 hours to make up your mind, and you do it. Well, now I got this road tract. Hey, you got a conference. You can drive down. You don't need a hotel. You can sleep in this damn thing. Just find a place to park. Do you do it or not? And the answer is, I have to do it. So anyway, I have this AMRAM. I'm going through this book with my yellow highlighter. Last night I read a couple of things while I was still a little bit high from a J I shared with friends of Lisa's from Denmark. And the words just really spoke to me, like, wow. Now, this morning I've gone to look back at those words of the highlighter, and they don't seem to have exactly the same impact. There was such a power of, yes, a resonance, I guess, is the term. And today, in the sober light of day, without the wine and the marijuana, it's kind of ordinary. And it bothers me that if I go to this place, I don't dare take any weed across the border, not even a cookie, and I know I would be enjoying that so much more. But surely if there's a gathering of Kerouac fans coming from all over North America to attend this event, including Europe, surely there'll be somebody there ready to share a J. Anyway, we'll leave that. I think I'll just stop there. I think, oh my God, I've gone on 17 minutes, and I'm only up to chapter 3. It begins the Jack Kerouac in the Face of God, followed by other people. Divine Madness, Demonic Madness, and the Holy, which would be them. William Burroughs. Each one is a chapter, and I guess how it somehow talked to him at a time of his life. A lot of quotes. And it'll be a great book to bring down there, and a book, if possible, I will try and get autographed. All right, Scarborough Dude, still up for adventure, still up for the need of adventure. I'm sorry I didn't do a very good job of this. I really wanted to talk about the struggle that I feel of needing to prove something, like this is something I need to do, against the voice that just says, hey man, you don't have to do anything. You've done your stuff, you know, you've lived your life. And it does get a little harder as you get a little older, you get a little lazier, you're just wanting a little more comfort. And as I keep saying on this podcast, that's the time you have to push yourself just a little bit harder. And I know deeply I have to do this. I simply have to do this. And maybe that's why I'm telling you, maybe this will be the added weight that will force me to get in that car Wednesday evening or Wednesday afternoon and drive to Kingston at the beginning of this journey to New Hampshire or Maine, or Massachusetts, to Kerouac's hometown, to truly, truly, truly savor the beats and just get a little more. One of Neil Cassady's children and his daughter will be there. It's an event. I will post a link when I post up this podcast if I don't tweet about it first. I'm just sort of wishing, the only thing that's missing, I sort of wish I had a friend close by that would say, man, oh man, are you going there? Yeah, take me. Even better, a friend would be staying at a hotel where I could park and step in for a shower while I sleep in the road track. But anyway, it'll be too late by the time you hear this to call me up and say, hey, can I come? Unless I'm proactive and put word out there. All right, that's it. We've gone on our usual 20 minutes. And always at the end of the 20 minutes, I feel, my God, Where the hell did I go with that? Anywhere at all? Was there any focus? Did I really say anything? And after, when I listen back, I always answer, yes, you did. It's that spontaneous, you know, spontaneous way of turning it on and just letting it out that I think works for me. And I think it's very, very, very much tied in to the beat influence, Kerouac in particular. Catch you later.
Eddie waited till he finished high school. He went to Hollywood, got a tattoo. He met a girl out there with a tattoo too. The future was wide open. They'd moved into a place they both could afford. He found a nightclub he could work at the door. She had a guitar and she taught him some chords. The sky was the limit. Into the great wide open, under them skies of blue, out in the great wide open, a rebel without a clue. Paper said Ed always played from the heart. He got an agent and a roadie named Bart. They made a record and it went in the charts. The sky was the limit. His leather jacket had chains that would jingle. They both met movie stars, partied and mingled. Their A&R man said, I don't hear a single. The future was wide open. Into the grave.
Almost forgot I had the bell. Sitting in the front seat of the road truck, you can maybe hear the engine running in the background. It's a cold morning, and I'm just getting it warmed up. I'm not going anywhere today. I am leaving Wednesday. And I'm a little anxious about that. Before any trip, I always feel a little bit on edge, just not quite in it. It's not till I'm down the road, in control, you know, away from home and heading in the direction I need to get to, that I begin to feel relaxed. And maybe, if all is going well, I'll let out one of those, yes, out real loud. But I'm not there yet, and it'll be quite a while before I do get there. I think I mentioned, I probably knew as soon as I saw this reference to the Lowell Celebrates Kerouac Festival and saw the dates, that I knew it had to happen. Like, Burning Man is one of those things, oh yeah, that's on my, the dreaded, what do you call it, checkbox, bucket list. I don't know if it ever really matters. If it's gotten so big and so huge, and it's, you know, who knows. Yeah, it'd be a neat thing. Right now, rather than a priority before Burning Man is Joshua Tree National Park, California. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. This week, I'll be heading towards Lowell, Massachusetts, birthplace of Jack Kerouac. And to partake in the events, I've contacted the hotel. Now, I realized, you know, I asked if I could park in the hotel, but that's without electric hookup. That's without anything. Like, that's just a cold, dark van. I'm probably going to have to find a place where I can drive out to, you know, a park nearby where I can get a shower and do something, you know, to clean myself up and come back and park in the city again. I don't know. Haven't sorted that out yet, and I probably won't until I get there. But I do need to at least prepare for options. I'm not just arriving, you know, completely at a loss. And as I say, I just have, you know, there's some anxiety with that, some feelings. And that's a natural thing. Natural for me, I think natural for most people. The big part was I made the decision. Now, speaking of making decisions, I got a few things to catch up on here. First of all, I'm just going to get out of the way. 50 dead, 200 injured, rumors of 400 taken to area hospitals. This is Las Vegas. This is last night, I guess, the night of October 1st, 2017. Largest mass shooting, I think, by one in United States history. All over the news, of course, today. And I'm surprised that I don't feel anything. I'm numb. Like, I don't feel pain. I don't feel sorrow. I'm not crying. There's a bitterness, there's a frustration, there's an anger underneath all of that. And even those feelings, I'm numb to, I'm just keeping in check. What's the point? As long as the country allows all its citizens to buy any kind of arms they want, you know, somebody's going to go out to break that record. Oh, I'll get 51, 55 maybe, 60, 70. You know, there'll be... It's a goal, you know. How many can you kill? Don't know anything about the guy who did it. Don't care. Well, I mean, I care. Yeah, I do care. That part I care about. I want to know who and why and what led him to this. So that if there's any chance starting in the next generation of early childhood, can you see any signs? You know, what are the... Do the psychology. Do the psychoanalysis. Although he's dead. But try and arrive at some sort of understanding of what led this man to do this. And is it even just the media itself? Anyway, I don't want to talk about it. Sorry. But I couldn't let the day go by without making reference to something as big, as tragic, as ugly, as awful, as disturbing as this. There was a very neat tweet that somebody posted, what it takes to get a gun in Japan. Starting with a course, it's only offered once a month, a written and, you know, a test, psychological evaluation, background checks, a shooting range test, relicensed police report to be filed, exactly where the gun is stored and where the ammunition is stored, separately, of course. You know, just the list. It's quite incredible. Oh, yeah, background, any affiliations with any known gangs, you know, and any other previous arrests. Of course, that isn't to say somebody can't get one on the black market, but that'd even be harder. And, of course, a lot of the black market is controlled by the Yakuza, and they don't want to have their reputation sullied by any kind of such shooting. They'll keep a tight lid, too, on who they sell to. Anyway... that ain't going to happen in the States because it's too late. You cannot put the genie back in the bottle. You cannot say, okay, starting now, those of you with guns are okay. You can keep them. Nobody else gets any. Well, of course, that always leads to more mass purchases before the deadline comes. And it's just, that's the way it is. That's the history of the United States is a history of violence. And that's it. Damn, stop talking. Especially, God, I'm crossing the border. If anybody decides to do a search, if some officer decides, well, let's pull this one guy over. And give me your password. Good chance I'd be turned back at the border. I just don't want to lose the van. But, of course, I will not be carrying weapons or drugs, so no fear of that. I've even got out my prescription for my medicine so that they'll know exactly what's in all those pills I have to bring with me. Oh, change of subject. Yesterday I joined the United Church of Canada. I surprised myself. I don't know if it's a surprise to you, but it was a surprise to me. It was Worldwide Communion Day, and this is a day Greta chooses to welcome any new members who want to join the church. And usually they speak up in advance, and she speaks to them. But when she did it today, it was a very interesting talk about Ecclesiastes, about, I guess, the from the earliest days when people spoke their minds openly, suggesting that the United Church has become a little closed, a little conservative, and there aren't these discussions anymore over what should be done. And of course, she is the prime victim who may very well soon be kicked out, in which case I will probably resign from the United Church of Canada because I would not want to be part of an organization that will not have Greta Vosper as a qualified and absolutely wonderful leader in this church. She said it might be her last. Good chance it might be her last time to ever do such a thing. And she even mentioned, because she doesn't do it exactly the way other churches do, that maybe somebody in a church higher up might count and say, well, those people don't really count because you didn't follow this procedure. It was a very nice ceremony. I guess what I liked the most, as she read out and she asked us questions, which, first of all, when she said, okay, those who would like to join, come forward now. I really didn't know until that moment that I would stand up and walk to the front of the church. And yet that's kind of the way I do things. Like if something feels right, it's like the purchase of this road check. Well, you do it. Well, go with your gut. Never mind. There's a little bit of noise in the head. Well, I feel a little nervous, uncomfortable. Do I really want to do this? Why would I do this? What's going to be like standing there? And then just do it. And again, very glad I did. She spoke. The words were wonderful. The words of sort of commitment. And if I had them, I'd read them, but I don't. But certainly nothing I had trouble with in terms of joining and agreeing to. And then you sort of, I guess you might call laying of hands, you sort of turned and faced back, and people from the church, members of the congregation, stood up and just touched each person and touched them on the shoulder. And it actually felt really good. Not knowing who was holding you or touching your shoulder, but feeling those hands on you. It was a wonderful feeling. It was very warming and very delightful. I think it brought a few tears to my eyes. And then Greta came to each one of us. There's only six of us who joined. The beauty of it, there's a woman who just started coming in January, and she brings her 13-year-old son. And he's the only, young person who actually sits through the service. If there's children, they go downstairs and play. But he sits through it, and it's a delight having this young 13-year-old kind of geeky kid with his mom in church every Sunday. And I was very happy to stand with them and join the same time. And I told them that. I said, I'm really glad that I joined the same time you guys joined. It made me feel good. And I think it was mutual. After the service, Thomas was outside folding up the the lectures or whatever, the guides, the church bulletins, and making paper airplanes. And I immediately just, bam, the 13-year-old kid in me came out. Hey, I know how to make good airplanes. And I sat down, and he ran in and got more paper, and we made airplanes together. I taught him one method, and Then I found out later he had been up in a glider the week before, and gliding on his hands on the controls. How exciting for a 13-year-old. So it's a delight. It really is a delight. But he made me promise that next week that I'd come and show him a new way to make paper airplanes. So I'm going to have to practice on that next time I come. That was kind of special. That was special to end the service the day I joined the church making paper airplanes. But during the service, when Greta spoke to each one of us, I can't recall all her words. I was just so, it was such an intense moment just standing face to face with her as she held my shoulder and said these words. And part of it was she knew that I had a lot of friends who would never come to this church. But in a way, I had my own ecclesiasts outside the church. And whether or not she was referring to this podcast or just knowing that I hang out with different people, I'm not sure. But it was very special. It was very special. So I'm very glad I did. And afterwards, I had a wonderful talk with Scott, her husband, and made him laugh when I said, I can't wait to tell my brother and sister. He's thinking, because they would never join. I said, no, because they are already longtime members of churches and will be so shocked that their younger black sheep brother joined. But that's that. It's just one of those things that is all part of where I'm at now. And it seems everything just seems to be fitting like a puzzle coming together. And it's getting easier and easier. However, it is Monday morning. I've got to give my first test today, and my responsibility as a teacher to go in, look again at that test, and see what is it that my students are going to have trouble with and try and teach them, not the questions on the test, but the concepts beforehand, whether it's paraphrasing, compound sentences, short answer questions, true, false, if false, make it true, you know, all those things review so that when they got a fighting chance when they do this first test. And so that's what I got to go and do. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of an update of where I'm at on this Monday morning, October 2nd, 2017. And as I say, by Wednesday, October 4th, will be the first anniversary, the first day that I bought this road track I'm sitting in now in the driver's seat. And it seems a very wonderful and very fitting journey to be taking, to heading off to visit Lowell, Massachusetts. With the first of all, a stopover in Kingston on the way. And celebrating the lives of my beat heroes and listening to what other people have to say and obviously connecting with some new people. Yeah, don't fully know what to expect. You never do. You know, when you try to picture into the future, you get some images in your mind, but it's the reality just immediately erases everything you thought and is just replaced by the here and now. And the here and now can only happen if you plan and act on your ideas and your dreams and your hopes and your wishes and your instincts. Scarborough Dude! Signing off.
This is Jim Hudson's window looking out on McDougal Street, summer of 1954. When he left me his old apartment, went away with a girl someplace. Parading among images, looking, and everybody's turning around and pointing. Nobody looks up and in, or listens to someone tabah that has unceasing compassion. No sound fills. See, blue moon. Holy ex-jack miracle night. Instead, yank and yucker for bits and pops, look for crashes, pictures, squares, explosions, birth, death. I know, sweet hero, enlightenment has come. Rest in the still. In the sun, think. Think not. Think no more lines. Straw hat, hands of back glass, the examined in a tame, distinct, warm prince. Reese Kirk playing Saul. Because the chess players won't end, still they sit. Years of hats and in the wonderful digital marble games, the Greeks of chess plot the pot and make game green. I know their game, their elephant, but pillow with a pearl in it, their gory bishops and vile pawns, their devout frontline sacrificial pawn shops, the stately king, who's so tall, the virgin queen, preen, denade, the knight knot, the Bhagavad Gita's of ignorance, Krishna's advice. Come on, the game begins. Johnny Weed, go home, man. So though I am wise, I have to wait like any other fool. Let's forget the struggles. Forget the scene. Just close our eyes, let me instruct thee. Here is dark milk. Here's a sweet Mahameru to you too. As he did to me one night at three, when we will flee out to see reality. And I said, wilt thou protect me, foil? But he, in his throatless deep mother hole, replied, Om.
So there's lots of people that are going to leave that red chamber. You saw the figure of Angel Lynn. Okay, I'm going to just jump in here. I can't stop myself from saying this. I really do have to share this. Today I am feeling very, very proud to be a Canadian. Proud of my country. It may be partly against the backdrop of what's happened south of the border on this day, October 2nd. But not really. I would feel this even with that. That wasn't, you know, in the news. I'm proud because of this, the ceremony itself of swearing in a governor general, a tradition. It's history, it's tradition, it's colorful. There was so much music involved. Native drummer, people who appeared to be Métis or, you know, clearly First Nations people singing and dancing in our Parliament building where this took place. The new Governor General, Julie Payette, French-Canadian woman who's been on the space station, a brilliant woman, speaks six languages, spoke many times in, I'm guessing maybe it was Cree, I don't know my Aboriginal languages, but clearly the person who was receiving it sitting there who conducted part of the swearing-in ceremony with feathers and so on was very grateful to be addressed in her native language. I'm going to turn out because we're going to start talking about what's happening below the border. This is above. I've watched a few of the ceremonies for swearing in the Governor General. I'm very happy that it is not just an old boys club, but there are women. I have sadly already forgotten the name of the woman from Haiti, whose ceremony brought tears to my eyes, and I felt this is absolutely so wonderful. A woman of color, if that's the expression, an immigrant, could come here and have this sort of highest position in the land. That was beautiful in itself, and again, there was music, there was celebration, there was joy, there was that thing we do so well in Canada. There is tolerance, there is acceptance of different people and different groups and different backgrounds. Julie Payette gave an excellent speech. about the fact that she could, just as a child, have this dream and nobody told her you can't do that. And, you know, since childhood she wanted to be an astronaut and she became one. Not everybody gets to do that, but nothing held her back. And, of course, she talked an awful lot about being in the space station, looking down at Earth where there are no borders, which are just man-made, and how people of different nations and backgrounds can work together to achieve a goal successfully. I won't go through the whole thing, but just, it was truly a moving ceremony. I'm looking at her now with her smile, her long, curly, blonde hair, and it just fills me with joy. I want to just give her a big hug and say, I'm so happy. Thank you. Thank you for being you. Thank you for being Canadian. Thank you for celebrating Canada. Thank you for raising the level of this country just another notch up. It's truly quite amazing. And this is the day after Jagmeet Singh became the leader of the federal NDP party. We have three parties in Canada, you know, Liberal, Conservative. Well, I'm sorry, there are more. There's Green and there's others. But the three who have a chance at winning elections right now are the Liberals in power under young Trudeau, another man. People have mixed feelings. I like him. I like him as a person. You cannot fault him. There are things about his politics or the Liberal Party you have problems with. That's fine. That's why we live in a democracy and can voice those things. I personally like the man, and he also makes me proud as a Canadian to say, hey, this guy's young, he's active, he's physically fit, and he's doing his best. But to have the federal NDP have their convention, and by majority on the first vote, somebody who is clearly a visible minority, air quotes, because he's wearing a very bright colored turban. Here's Jean Chrétien.
Very good representative of Canada because of all the things she's done and all the abilities and the qualities that she can show.
Now, you have chosen two governors general in the past.
Yeah.
In choosing one, how difficult is it to make that decision?
But you consult some people, and eventually there is a moment when you decide who you take. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I named the first Acadian, Mr. LeBlanc, and after that, refugee, Madame Clarkson. You know, she was a refugee from the war from Hong Kong, and she was a great governor general. And, you know, and I think that the prime minister made a very good choice. They asked for my, if I agreed, of course.
He did ask for your advice.
Somebody asked me, yes.
Somebody asked.
Yeah, I mean, they do that. Mr. Harper, I've done the same thing with Mr. Johnson, too. They had asked me for names, and they have asked me for names.
Now, I can't let you go without asking you.
Kitchy's looking a little old, forgetting a few words, but still.
Yourself. Just do it the way she wants to do it. You know, you can't. If you try to change yourself, you lose it. At one time, they tried to make me a little bit different, and it was a disaster. When I was the leader of the opposition, they got me to read text and look what I was now. And eventually, I kicked them out, and I came back as the old Jean Chrétien, and that worked.
I love the man.
She has to be herself all the way, and she will be a very great success, I know, because I know her very well, and she's a friend of my wife and of my daughter, and so on, and we know her since years.
Did you talk to her before, after, any time in the, like, last
since week? She has been appointed? No, I've not talked to her.
But are you going to chat with her and...
Probably, if she invites me. I guess she might.
She might have you for dinner?
I'm not sure, but...
Okay, we'll tune out there. I'm sorry, that was an aside, but I just, it's another man who I've always liked, Jean Chrétien, with his Shewinigan handshake. A man who arm wrestled protester, not arm wrestled, I'm sorry, got him in a headlock when the his security detachment was further away and some guy was bugging him. another great Canadian. All right. Anyway, I'm sorry. This may not mean anything to Well, what do you mean it may not mean anything? Of course it means something. It makes me really happy. And I just feel the need to share that, this joyful occasion. And yes, back to Jagmeet Singh, who says, yeah, I'm going to be prime minister. Now, I don't know how well he'll be received in certain parts of the country because of his being a Sikh and wearing a headpiece and seeming to represent a religion, when provinces like Quebec are saying, we don't want any signs of any religion on display. It's hard to get away from a turban, but we'll see what happens. But I think Canadians overall, it shows we have come a long way and are just continuing to evolve as a country. This is not the country it was when I was a kid. And I think we're doing a lot of things right. And yeah, it's as simple as that. Bye for now. Yeah, I'm back for a moment. Something occurred to me yesterday when I was listening to the Marshall McLuhan Variety Hour. You know how they do the game, the 5 D's, drink, debauchery, driving, discussion, disaster. I had to write that down so I wouldn't forget it. I thought, oh, you know, it'd be fun to do one for the beats. Which of the beats would you want to, do each of those things with? And I did the exercise, and I'm going to share it with you now. But the funny part is, to me, that if I gave it to anybody, any of my friends who know anything about the beats, we would all more than likely arrive at exactly the same answers for the very same reasons. And it's amazing how it fits. There's no other way to do it. So I'm gonna let you think in advance before I go through the 5 D's, drinking, debauchery, driving, discussion, disaster. And the 5 beats I'm going to pick are 5 central names. There'd be Jack Kerouac, of course. There'd be Allen Ginsberg. There'd be Neil Cassidy. Gary Snyder, representing the West Coast. And William Burroughs. Okay? So, you know, there's a few others. But those are center. Those are central characters in the beats. So, who would you want to have a drink with? Who's the drinker? Well, of course it'd be Kerouac, because it'd be a wild, it would carry right on into a weekend. It would just, there'd be no end to it. There'd be other people picked up along the way. I mean, he, of all of them, was the prime drinker, the best drinker, the person who, you know, would just take it to the extremes. Now, maybe some of you aren't into that, but in my prime, that's certainly the guy I would have gone with and put my money on. So there we go. Drinking with Kerouac. Debauchery. Well, now this is an interesting one. You know, now I'm beginning to think, well, maybe some of you might have different answers after all. But for me, debauchery would be Allen Ginsberg. Now, whoa! The guy was a homosexual, and wow, he was just out there long before it was fashionable or acceptable even. But he reminds me a lot of my friend John, who we met out in Vancouver on the West Coast, who's no longer with us, sadly. And John was maybe bisexual on some days, but hard to say. But John just liked parties and liked celebrations, and he just liked it. The best party was when everybody got naked. And that's why he made himself president of a hot tub company, because once he got hot tubs established at his various friends' places in Vancouver, there were going to be parties and naked people. So Ginsberg would have it pretty wild. But he would attract, I mean, you see, Ginsberg is not just the beats. He would have attracted all the hippie chicks, all the people who love to take off their clothes and dance. So, yeah, without a doubt, the most exciting, wildest possible party would be with Allen Ginsberg and his entourage and all the hangers-on. Driving? Well, who's the driver? Neil Cassidy, you know, the guy who drove Kerouac across the country that inspired him to write his books in the fashion that he wrote them. And not only that, was the driver
for Ken Kesey when they drove the bus further across the continent doing their electric Kool-Aid acid tests. Neil Cassidy, of course, for driving. The wildest, craziest. The guy could steal cars and burn out the engine at 100 miles an hour on mountain roads. Yeah. Discussion. Discussion Gary Snyder. Gary Snyder is the deepest, a Zen teacher, you know, has spent 10 years in Japan studying in Kyoto at Zen monasteries. Very much an environmentalist, and was from the start. He represented the Zen Buddhism of the West Coast that nurtured the East Coast beats. And would be the one who was teaching up until recently, is still alive, I believe, maybe. Pretty sure he is, yeah. And is somebody you can get into a very real and very deep discussion with about any number of things. And of course, he knew each of those beats and he was a feature character in the Dharma Bums. So, for sure, discussion with Snyder. Now, that leaves disaster. Well, who's left? William Burroughs, the craziest of the whole bunch. The man who wrote Naked Lunch and The Ticket That Exploded and Junkie and The Soft Machine and all those other crazy books, and was, you know, lured himself into the underworld of New York City in the 1940s, was a junkie and just wanted to taste everything. Shot his wife, you know, unfortunately shot her through the head at a drunken party. She apparently, the best version is she put a glass on her head and said, let's do our William Tell routine, and they were already drunk. And apparently, according to Burroughs, the gun aimed a little low, and hightailed it out of Mexico. Ended up in Tangier and on the run for quite a while. Sad story, but that's the guy who's going to come up with some crazy way of taking care of the zombies or anybody else. So I'd like to know if anybody else, I mean, there's only a handful of listeners of this podcast who are that familiar with the beats, I think. If you had any different take, I mean, you might argue, you can't. There's no other way to do it. All right, I'm going to leave it there. Just wanted to let you know that I listen to other podcasts and I'm inspired by them too, but this strikes me as very, very funny. All right, Scarborough Dude signing off. Bye for now.
Heaven,
Hurry, hide, butterfly, as clouds roll past my head. I know why the skies all cry.
Ow. Thank you.